Climb into the cockpit with pilot and Wing Square's Chief Legal Officer, Tim Perilla, as he invites legal leaders aboard to share advice that will help you navigate even the most turbulent times of in-house counsel work. We'll cover a range of topics from data privacy to legal team structure to public company transactions and beyond. You don't want to miss this series. Fasten your seatbelt and prepare for takeoff. You're listening to Cockpit Counsel.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Cockpit Counsel. My name is Tim, and I'm the Chief Legal Officer at Link Squares.
And I'm Alyssa Verzino, producer and co-host of the show. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. Now let's jump into our next episode.
Welcome everybody. Today we have Nina Blackshear from Spark Therapeutics. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, glad to be here.
So you're senior counsel over there, right?
I am.
So we start every show the same way. We ask everyone what their pre-flight ritual is.
Oh boy, okay.
Like very literally, like before you get on a plane.
Okay, so before I get on a plane, let's see. First of all, I generally wear like the same outfit every time that
you're
I plane fly.
Clothes.
Yes, at some point they're gonna just start profiling me at the airport.
Right.
Although I did recently upgrade to something a little more structured to look a little more fancy on the plane.
All right.
I try to, if I can fly business, I like to fly business.
Yes.
My husband sometimes will drop me off, although sometimes it's better to have an Uber so we don't get in a fight on the way to the airport.
That is
and,
a good thing.
Yeah. Mess up all of my energy before I get on
just
the
like
plane.
Escape the house.
Yeah. Bye. I love you. I leave you here. And then when I get to the airport, I always get a water bottle so that I'll have one to keep with me throughout the trip. Mm-hmm. If there is a Starbucks, I definitely order ahead and I get a Starbucks venti chai latte. Extra hot, extra pump of chai with soy.
Nice.
And I think that's about it. I listen to music while I'm on and just try to just veg out and relax and keep the plane up with my good vibes.
That's awesome. So tell me a little bit about your career. What brought you, like, what is your career path and what brought you to Spark?
Yeah, so I'm pretty open about the fact that I went to law school because I had no idea what to do after undergrad.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of people, right, they don't want to admit it, but then they're like, yes, me too. And
what am I going to do with this poli sci degree?
Correct. Not get a job, right? That's the answer. Spoiler.
That's right.
So I came to law school without really a real vision of why I was there. And as everybody who's probably listening to this who's a lawyer knows, it gets pretty grim about halfway through, right? It gets very grueling. And if you don't have that North Star out on the horizon, it's really hard to sort of keep going. And for me, I didn't have a North Star. And I just sort of flamed out. Like, I was like, I hate this. I don't want to do it. But I didn't want to have debt for no reason. So I knew I wanted to graduate and I was going to take the bar.
Yep.
So I muscled my way through school and got out, and I was going to be an event planner because I was the social committee chairperson for Black Law Students Association and thought, I love this. So I graduated, I'm doing all the bar stuff, I'm studying, and it's 2001 and then 9/11 hit.
Okay.
So nobody's throwing parties. Nobody's having events. So now I'm just living in my parents' basement wondering what's next. So long story short, a bunch of sort of serendipitous, random, you know, connections, phone calls, relationships got me to a clerkship, which then got me into a contract attorney position. I was then recruited in to do employee relations in human resources at a pharmaceutical company.
Okay.
While I was there, I switched over and did marketing communications.
Nice.
Then my role ended there. It was eliminated and I came out. I ended up doing major gift fundraising for Temple University in Philadelphia.
Okay.
And in one of those iterations, one of those transitions, I met somebody who's now my GC at Spark, but she was at GSK. We got friendly, we stayed in touch. And she's like, you know, I know you think you're out of the law, but I'm gonna bring you back to the dark side. And I was like, yeah. It's all over for me. She's like, we'll see. Yeah. So she's very compelling. And when she moved to the company where she recruited me in initially, my previous company at Insight, she called me and she said, you know, I know you don't have the traditional path, but you've got a lot of the things that I'm looking for and I think will be very critical for this client group that we're supporting.
Yeah.
So if you're ready, come on. And so that's how I came straight in-house, really, without ever being at a firm.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing if you can sidestep the firm process. I've been in-house my entire career.
Okay. So okay.
I'm very, very fortunate.
Yeah.
Although early on, I definitely could have used the big firm salary. You know?
Yes. Me too. Right. I was, did I mention I was clerking? That's okay. Right.
So you're also an executive coach, right?
I am.
So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So I've always been somebody that, you know, my friends have come to for advice, right? Okay. And I was happy to dole it out because, like most lawyers, I love being the smartest person in the room. And I had a friend who, you know, I was giving her a lot of advice and, you know, really trying to really build her, you know, build her up, build her confidence. And one day she called me and she said, "Oh, I'm so glad I got you because I really needed my guru."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh no." Because what I realized was I thought I was giving her advice to help her to find the strength within herself. And what I'd really done is created codependence.
Right.
On the advice.
Right.
And I just thought there's got to be a better way. I want to help people find their own power, but like really know that it is within them that I'm not the thing that they need.
Right.
And so I started looking at what that really looked like. And that's how I got into executive coaching. So, yep, I do it on the side and I take on a limited number of clients and I do coaching, consulting, keynote speaking, webinars, the whole nine.
So off the record, but totally on the record.
Absolutely.
Which do you like better?
Oh, in-house. How could I choose between my two babies? You know, I like them for, there's actually a lot of similarities, which is interesting, right? The fact that I get to be a trusted advisor, you know, on the legal side, it is a little more directive. And on the coaching side, it's more of me asking a lot of really great questions to help people find their own answers. Yeah. But you get to do a little bit of that, I think, as in-house too, in my opinion, if you're doing it right, because that's how you engage the business and you make it sort of a symbiotic relationship where they're inviting you in as actually part of their extended business team versus I'm the person you come to for the legal answers and then you go away again.
Right. That's the best part about being in-house is the part where you're not actually being a lawyer.
Correct.
Like a traditional lawyer.
Yeah, you're on the team and you're going to flag things that other people aren't, just like the finance person is going to flag some stuff maybe that you're not, right? But I do like it sort of that holistic approach to my role. I don't just want to be right the place you send the contract, and I certainly don't want to be the office of no.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you've had an interesting and varied career. Mm-hmm. Like, what are some of the things that you found from your non-legal jobs that you were able to bring in? And you think gave you a good advantage?
Mm-hmm. I would say it's two main things. Well, three probably. First, the fact that I've had so many different kinds of roles in so many different kinds of industries means that I'm not afraid of change. And I know that I can bounce back and I can pretty much learn anything. Like if it's not opening up a man's chest or putting him on the moon,
right?
I'm probably going to figure it out. Right. And I think for people who, you know, and no shade to them, but if they went on a very, very vertical path in the law and never really tried anything else, they know they're really good at this one thing, but maybe not as confident in their ability to pivot and do other things. And I'm just not afraid because I couldn't afford to be afraid. How about that?
Right.
I will also say emotional intelligence, and that probably came from fundraising more than anything else.
Okay.
Because I was covering the West Coast, even though I was on the East Coast, right? And I would set up appointments with alumni, and you'd meet them for the first time, like for a coffee for 30, 45 minutes. But by the end of that conversation, I had to have built enough rapport to ask them for $50,000.
Right.
Right? So you better figure out how to build bridges fast, find points of connection. So I think being able to build my emotional intelligence skills in that role was critical. And then I think the third thing for me is having worked in marketing communications particularly, I was on the business side, right? So now I'm coming to lawyers and we're trying to work through things to get business objectives done.
Right.
It makes, I worked with lawyers who were very helpful.
And maybe a few that were less helpful.
And lawyers that weren't as helpful, right? And so it actually was a good model for me about the kind of lawyer that I wanted to become when I realized these are the people on the other side of the table from me. They have crazy deadlines like I had crazy deadlines. They've got extended teams screaming at them because something didn't get through legal review in a timely fashion. How can I be part of solution, not just, sorry, come back next week?
Right, exactly. So thinking about how you're able to sort of manage your workload, increase efficiency, has a lot of that different experience also contributed to your ability to like just operationally lay out your legal work?
I think so, in the fact I'm good at juggling a lot of things in general, right? Okay. And again, I think those pivots and being sort of able to turn on a dime, and I think this is actually for most lawyers, we're all able to assimilate very large amounts of information in a very short amount of time, right? I think that is a skill that we are sort of all universally taught. And so I feel like those things have contributed to me being able to juggle many plates and figure out how to fit it all in. I mean, right, I work a very busy job. I have a business that I run on the side. I am on the board of the Association of Corporate Counsel Greater Philadelphia. I co-chair our Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, Belonging Committee, right? I mentor lots of people, right? And then I come and do cool stuff like this, right?
So right.
It's busy. Yeah. It's fulfilling, but it's busy. But I think knowing that you can take one thing at a time and knowing that you can have it all, you maybe just can't have it all exactly at the same time.
Right, exactly. So as far as like building relationships across the business, what are some things that you found that are really helpful? You know, maybe think about like things that you wish you would have known or would have been better at when you first started working in-house.
I think, I brought this when I first started in-house. I think earlier in my career, I wish I had known some of these things. I think being more curious and asking more questions, right? I definitely, again, I mean, I don't want to generalize, but lawyers are generally very smart people. And sometimes we're just used to being the smartest in our high school class, the smartest in our law school class, you know, the smartest in the room. And that can lead to us not having a lot of humility and not a lot of curiosity about what other people know and what other people bring to the table. When I started with my previous company, there was, you know, we were supporting a group that was initially very legally resistant. And we had a lot of relationships and bridges that we needed to forge. And one of the things I did with one of our leaders who's very scientifically oriented was I asked him for a tour of his lab. Cool. Right. And it was like, he couldn't believe that I was interested in what he did. And look, I'm not a science lady. I'm not going to lie and pretend that I am. But again, with that sort of legal brain of assimilating information quickly, as he's kind of explaining something, I'm putting some dots together enough to ask an intelligent question about it. And just watching him light up, and it really smoothed the path for us to have an amazing working relationship moving forward. So I think those things are really important.
That's awesome. Yeah, taking the time to understand somebody else's perspective is always helpful when you're actually trying to work with people.
Correct. Or in general, right?
Well, in life,
I mean, relationships, period, right? We think we're still the center of everything. And I think if you can decenter yourself, even just for a few moments, you'd be amazed what you'd find outside.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like that mentality of recognizing that things don't really happen to you. They just kind of happen around you sort of thing.
Yeah, and they're happening.
Right? And it's how you interact
with
them.
Yes, yeah. And they're happening to everybody else at the same time. Can I just tell you a quick story about how when I realized that I wasn't the center of the universe? Is that okay?
Yeah, I think so. Alyssa, is that okay?
That's fine.
All right.
it was very young actually that I realized that. I had to relearn that over and over again. But when I was very young, I remember riding in the back of the car with my parents on a highway and watching the cars go by. And you know, you'd see the people in the cars as you were looking out the window. And there was just, I remember so distinctly, there was this moment where I watched a car pass us and like get off an exit. And I thought, those people are going on and they still like exist. Like they have their own life.
Right.
Like up till then, they were just in my world. And then they sort of faded into nothing as soon as the car sped by.
Right.
And just realizing and started to look around and thought, all these people have their own, they're all in a car like me and they go on and do other things.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And you're just a part of their scenery.
Correct. Right. Yeah. Exactly. I'm just a glimpse for them. So I try to remind myself of that.
Yeah. I wish more people would remind themselves of that. We'd probably have a much better world.
Send them to me. I'll make sure I'll coach them up.
That's awesome. I like that. So, as far as maybe some hard skills that you developed working in house or through the executive coaching, what are some things that you wish you had known earlier there? Or maybe focused on.
Yeah. And maybe. I won't even say hard skills. I mean, depending on how you quantify them, but I would say being patient and biding your time.
Yeah.
Right. I think, when I was younger in my career, I wanted to control things. Right. And if I was unhappy in a situation, I wanted to figure out how I could put pieces together to make it different. And sometimes the problems sort of just take care of themselves. right?
Sometimes,
not always. Sometimes you have to evaluate and decide if it's time to remove yourself from an environment, right?
Right, right.
But, you know, go charging too hard on, you know, this leader or that leader who's not doing a great job, you know, every now and again, just sitting back and sort of letting it unfold without my involvement, without me needing to control it or thinking, you know, I know how this should go. I think was a very, it's a difficult lesson for me still. I'm a control freak like many lawyers, but knowing that sometimes things just ebb and flow. And I think you have to go through a certain number of cycles in your career to really appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something I wish I knew earlier. There is, you know, there's a time in my career where I was like, trying to avoid a lot of problems instead of just like being confident that I could solve them, like once they become problems.
Yeah.
And so like, not everybody wants their problem solved.
Correct.
Right. And you don't always want to help people solve their problems, right?
Yeah.
Because you become a crutch.
And you become, and you start to burn out, right? Well, because now you're taking on everything for everybody because, and it, there's ego there too, right? It's not just about helping. Sometimes it's about, I've got it. I can come in and save the day.
Right.
Right. But you take on, you take on, you take on, and people get used to you being in that role. So they start to dump.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then you flame out.
Yeah, exactly. And so sometimes it's like, well, okay, you're just going to have to figure this one out. Just go ahead and do it.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. I'm interested to hear more about your executive coaching as well. Like, how has your approach changed over time?
I think very much in the way that I sort of teed it up, right? Like it was once I sort of pivoted from, it's not about giving advice because that's just sort of that, you know, feeding a man a fish as opposed to the teach a man to fish approach. You know, just really listening has always been one of my superpowers, right? And so even when I was doing fundraising, people would always say, like, even in those short conversations, people would tell me like their whole life story. And they would say, I don't know why I'm telling you all this. Like, I never talk about myself like this. There's something about the composition of my eyebrows or something that makes people want to sort of open up. And I respect that and I appreciate that, right? And so for me, you know, coaching and sometimes that's just giving somebody a space to really feel heard and that they really have somebody's full attention. We get that so rarely these days, especially in this digital age, right? Everybody's always distracted. Everybody's always talking to you while they're kind of scrolling on their phone or they're checking an email. And just for me to give somebody 100% of my attention, I have found is really, really powerful. And it's, I'm really humbled to be able to give that space to people.
That's nice. I mean, I definitely even noticed that about you when I met you on Zoom. Like, I feel like we were talking, I was like, we've been talking for a long time and I don't even know what I'm saying to her. Like,
but I told her all my deepest, darkest.
No, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I told her like a lot that I didn't mean to tell her and I don't know why. Like, I had that same experience. So,
oh, I'm so glad.
You're not wrong. Oh, that's definitely true.
Thank you.
Yeah. But I guess, do you have any advice on authentic leadership for listeners that are earlier in their career?
I do. I mean, you know, if you're earlier in your career, sometimes you feel like you're not empowered to, like, you know, to lead authentically. I just did a keynote about this and we're talking about showing up as your, you know, whole self as part of authentic leadership. And what does that really mean? And I think generationally, sometimes there's a bit of a disconnect in that respect. What does showing up as your whole self really mean? Your whole self is this big circle, right? Who you show up at work authentically as can be a circle within that. And it doesn't mean that you're lying about who you are or you're hiding. You're just making nuanced choices about how much of your whole self you would like to bring to this particular environment. And for every environment, that circle within the circle may look slightly different, right? And so I think, first of all, knowing how you'd like to show up, reading the room to a certain extent, you have to understand what's going to be successful in any given environment, but then coming up and then showing up as that authentic subset of yourself is the first step to being an authentic leader. Because if you're not showing up as an authentic human being, you're certainly not going to be able to graduate into being an authentic leader, right? And then for authentic leadership, I think things like, for me, this is the world according to Nina, for me, it's kindness, it's empathy, it's inclusion, it's vulnerability. And the biggest piece is self-awareness and making sure that you are acting in a way that's in integrity with your core values, like who you truly are. Because if you're, you know, shifting away from that or you're trying to conform to a particular mold, first of all, people can smell that a mile away, right? But also, it's it's exhausting. It's exhausting to live out of integrity with who you are at your core. So getting back to who that is, and if you've strayed, knowing you can kind of, you can go back along your path and pick up something you might have left behind that you didn't mean to, or you felt like pressured to put down, you can go back and you can retrieve it and you can show up differently.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Do you go through when you're doing your coaching sessions, like figuring out what those values are, or how do you approach that with people?
It depends on what people want coaching for, right? Yeah. If it's about authentic leadership, then absolutely, right? And sometimes that can be a combination of coaching and therapy. There's a little bit of an overlap, but therapy tends to look back. Coaching tends to look forward, right? But sometimes understanding why somebody's showing up the way that they are in this very moment, you know, means you have to kind of look back. I shared yesterday in my session, because again, I'm all about being vulnerable and I'm a pretty open book, that I realized I was looking for the love that I didn't feel like I was getting from my mother. I was looking for that at work from female bosses. And so I was putting a lot of pressure on those relationships that right. did not really belong at work. So any little bit of feedback I got that wasn't glowing, I was devastated because it was hitting me at some like really deep emotional level. But I had to realize that through therapy, I had to realize that so that I could say, okay, I have to stop assigning this role to, that's not their role. And right. from there on, it was completely different. I didn't keep tripping up over the same thing over and over again. So I think therapy and coaching can both help with those kinds of things.
Do you talk a lot about imposter syndrome? I know we talked about that when we chatted before.
I do. I know everybody's so bored of me talking about, but it's one of my favorite things because I think it's so pervasive. It's something that so many people feel ashamed about, so people don't talk about it. So the problem is it's an epidemic, but everybody thinks it's just them.
Right.
So people feel alone, right? And it's like, I don't want your community just to be based on the fact that we all, you know, lots of people have imposter syndrome, but I do want people to know, like, it's not just you. It's not that everybody else has it figured out and you're the only one who feels like, I don't know how I got in here, but sooner or later, they're going to figure out I don't belong here and they're going to kick me out. Right. Imposter syndrome, I would say, comes up in almost every coaching engagement that I do. Mm-hmm. And I speak about it a lot, and people sign up for those sessions a lot. So that tells me again, it's, you know, it's everywhere.
Right.
I actually kind of like that. Like, if someone told me that they were having imposter syndrome, it makes me feel like they're actually pushing themselves beyond what they've done before.
Hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, why, like, yeah, I've never done this before, and they're going to find out I've never done this before. And it's like, well, yeah, but if you do it, then who cares? Kind of thing, right?
Right. And I guess for me, fundamentally, why are you an imposter just because you've never done something before?
Right.
Right?
We've
never done lots of things. You didn't ride a bike until you rode a bike, right?
Yeah.
You didn't swim in the ocean until you swam in the ocean. You weren't an imposter the first time you tried it.
Right.
To your point, you were a brave soul trying something new.
That's right.
So I think for me, you know, I talk a lot about external and internal imposter syndrome, how they can be imposed those two ways. Sometimes, yes, external. There's people or environments that kind of try to telegraph that we're not enough for whatever reason, right? There could be diversity demographics that have them telling us you don't belong here, so that can feed it. But there's, for me, it's the internally imposed imposter syndrome where people are, again, they're not being true to who they are. And so they're telling these tiny little lies.
Right.
Every day, right? Little ones, right? You laugh at a joke you don't think is that funny or you think is off color because you don't want people to think, oh, you're the stick in the mud, right? You go and do the thing the boss wants to do because you're like, oh, I want to be part of the team, but like, I don't want to do this, right? So little by little, right? Or you want that next promotion, you want to make partner, you whatever it is. And you just start to get out of sync with yourself. And to me, that's the most insidious kind of imposter syndrome because you actually are an imposter. Right? Trying something new that you've never done before does not make you an imposter. But pretending to know things you don't, be things you're not, like things you don't.
That's where it gets toxic.
Yeah. Like, absolutely. Really. Right. Yeah. You know, so you put a lot of pressure on yourself. And of course, then you start to get nervous about being found out because you've actually misrepresented yourself.
Right.
Do you have tidbits or like a teaser of the advice that you give for imposter syndrome if you were to be coaching somebody on it?
I mean, the first thing is, again, it's almost the same as authentic leadership. It's like you've got to really take a very hard look in the mirror and figure out who you truly are, right? Strip away, oh, well, this isn't good. You know, they wouldn't like this at work, or this isn't how I get ahead in this environment, or, you know, this isn't what my parents told me I should be, whatever. Like, just really take a moment and figure out, what do you want? And we talked, you know, as a panel yesterday, and we talked about the voice in your head and how the voice in your head tells you, you know, that you don't belong, or you're stupid, or, you know, you're not good enough for this, whatever. And that voice sounds like our voice, but when you really unpack it, like, is that your voice, or did you inherit that? Mm-hmm. Did you inherit those words and you put them in your own voice? Mm-hmm. Was it a parent? Was it a teacher? Was it a boss? Was it a clergy? Whoever, right? Was it somebody who put you down and you've internalized that? And I just encourage people to take an honest look, right? You can do it in the privacy of your own bedroom. Nobody else has to see. And just say, these things that I say to myself, do I truly believe them? Do I really think I'm stupid? No, really, do I think I'm stupid? Or where did I get that? When's the first time I started believing that? And just track back a little bit. And if you truly look at everything you've got in your picnic basket and say, yes, I believe all of this. Okay, pack it all back up. But you have the choice, you have the power to say, I don't believe that anymore. And I'm not gonna put it back in my basket.
Can you share a little bit about the 5X method that you shared with me also?
Yes. So almost every women's conference that I've ever been at, we come up with, we talk about that phenomenon where men will apply for a job if they've got 10% of the qualifications, right? And women won't apply for a job unless we have 100% of the qualifications. So we talk about it. And it's like, oh, just, you know, women need to be braver and just go ahead and apply. And I just felt like there was this disconnect, like, okay, there's this fear and we're saying, just do it. But like, how, what's the bridge? What's the how? And so I came up with the 5X method as a how. So basically the 5Xs are, they stand for expertise, experience, exposure, exchange, and excitement. Okay. So what you do is, and it involves office supplies, which I'm a weird geek and I love so much. So here's how I recommend you do it. You take a job that you would love to apply for, but you're a little bit nervous, and it works for anybody who's feeling, you know, hesitant. Right. It's not just for women, but because that's where this conversation comes up a lot. And you take your resume and you go through the job description. And when you see something on the job description where you have expertise, you highlight that in your first color. So let's say your first color is pink. You highlight on your resume what in pink matches up with that. Then you say, okay, so these are things I have, like, deep expertise. I do them all the time. I know them like the back of my hand. The second one is experience. So these are things, I've touched them a couple times. I've got some experience. I'm not gonna say I'm an expert. You highlight them in your next color. Let's say it's orange, right? Then you go to exposure. Okay, so these are things where maybe not an expert, maybe not sort of even a lot of experience, you've been in some rooms where they've talked about them. You've got some vocabulary around that, right? It's not a completely foreign concept. You've been exposed to it, right? So you highlight that in your third color. It's yellow. Fourth is exchange. This is transferable skills, right? So now you're like, I don't have expertise, experience. I haven't really been exposed, but I'm reading this. I'm a smart person. Here's some stuff on my resume that I actually think could be a transferable skill. I could build a bridge between this experience here and what they're looking for over here that would make sense to them, right? Mm-hmm. And I can come up with what that narrative is. And then the last category, so that's green, let's say, right? And the last category, blue, is excitement. Because honestly, if you have 100% of the qualifications for a job.
Yeah, it's probably not that exciting for you.
And you should be applying for the next job up, right? Yeah. So I don't think anybody should have 100% of the qualifications for a job. So that last bit is blue, and it's excitement. It's like, I don't have any of these things. I can't even build a bridge for a transferable skill. That's where you say in the interview, I've never touched this, and this is the part of the job that excites me, right? And then you look at your resume, and you look at this job description, and you see all these colors, right? So if it's sparse, and you don't have a lot of color at all, maybe it is a little bit of a stretch, right? I'm not gonna say, you know, you can necessarily, I'm trying to think what the fanciest job is, right? Like run the Obama Foundation right away, right? But if you look at this, it's like really graphic, colorful, physical evidence that you have more to offer than maybe you thought you did when you just read the job description. Right. And it's just a way to get you there and say, no, I have enough, and start to craft that conversation.
That's awesome. I think that's such great advice.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we end every episode with some rapid fire questions. What is your hot take on working in-house?
My hot take on working in-house is that it is broader in the sense that you deal with lots of different issues, even though people think it's narrower in the sense from working in a firm because you have the same clients repeatedly. So you're just flexing, I think, in a different way. So for people who think, oh, I'm gonna be bored, it's the same client over and over again, I do think the range of issues that you see is actually broader because they'll pull you into anything.
Awesome. What's your number one leadership tip?
You go first. Whatever it is, you wanna be vulnerable, you wanna be authentic, you wanna change the culture, you wanna get people engaged, you go first.
Nice. And what is the best career advice that you've ever given or received?
I think the best career advice that I ever received was from my father, who was very influential. We had a wonderful relationship. He passed away in 2018 and I miss him terribly, but he told me 80% of any opportunity is just being in the room. Yeah. So it really spurs me, even though I can't go to everything, you know, believe it or not, I'm an introvert, so I do get tired, but one way to guarantee you won't get an opportunity is to not to be there in the first place. So I think that's one of the best pieces of advice I ever received.
Absolutely. And what's a charity or a cause that's close to your heart that we can amplify through our channels that our listeners should check out?
Excellent. So, I'll say two. So one is the Association of Corporate Counsel Greater Philadelphia. We have, as I said, I co-chair our Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, Belonging Committee. We have a diversity internship program and we do receive, we will accept donations to that program. Mm-hmm. And it helps to build a diverse talent pipeline for the legal profession, especially in the greater Philadelphia area. So that's near and dear to my heart. And there's also an organization called Face to Face. It's in Philadelphia where they feed and clothe people who are unhoused or have fallen on hard times. But the number one thing is that they make sure that they are treated with the utmost dignity and respect. So I volunteer there. I like to go and cook and do things like that the day before my birthday so that on my birthday I can get lots of massages. But yes, these are two places I love.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome conversation.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, listeners, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us. And if you have any topics for discussion or guests you'd like to see on the show, feel free to submit them to cockpitcouncil@linksquares.com.